I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
Hey, Potty fam. Today I chat with podcast royalty Brittany Hockley and Laura Byrne, the powerhouses behind Australia's most downloaded podcast, Life Uncut, with more than 70 million downloads. You may also know them from The Bachelor, and today we chat about how they built their personal brands from the opportunity and achieved longevity in their media careers. The girls have just come back from the national live show tour, which was such a success, and have also written a book called We Love Love and are co-hosts of the KISS 106.5 radio show The Pickup. Laura is also the owner of jewelry brand Tony May that she's run for 13 years and has been growing from strength to strength. This episode was such a laugh. We seriously had such a good chat and ran so over time. So this will be my first, wait for it, drum roll please, my first two-parter. In this episode, we talk to the girls about how they got to where they are today and talk on a more personal level. And then we cover the more businessy stuff in part two. I know you'll love this as much as I do. So, all right, let's get into it.
Okay. I'm so nervous because you guys are like podcast royalty. I'm like, you're judging me on how do I start this podcast? How were the live shows?
Do not be nervous. We are the people, we should be the least nervous around.
Also, firstly, like your studio is way better than our studio. So like we're still pretending like we know what we're doing. So it's like the live shows were amazing. We had so much fun. We had 7 live shows around Australia that we ended up doing. Wow. And most of them were sold out. A couple of them were like at 90% capacity and they were just ridiculous, like chaos of fun.
I don't have a vision board, but it's going in my mental vision board to do something like that. That's so sick.
I think it surprised a lot of people because when you hear about a podcast show, quote unquote, I think a lot of people imagine that there are two people on stage talking, doing a podcast, recording a live podcast, but that's not what it was. It was like audience engagement. It's almost stand-up comedy. We had Sam Fisher singing. We had Mitch Turi opening with a comedy piece. We had different guests all over at every single show. It was wild. Sex positions. Like, wow. It was fully incredible. Yeah.
It's like Jimmy Fallon, like late show, whatever, like, and you get to like decide whatever you want.
It turned into a bit of an extravaganza, but I think that this comes from the insanity of it. Like the amount of layers and like almost like trying to pile in too many things comes from like a bit of imposter syndrome. We were both like, well, if people are going to pay money to come and see a show, we want them to leave and it being like them getting the best out of every single part of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So at no point was it just Brit and I standing on stage, like having a normal chat like we would on the podcast. It was a real performance, which was a very fun and very much outside of what we would normally do.
And one thing I've realized is we don't actually have to do that. I've since been to other podcast shows that have just been two people
talking.
And people would have been just as happy, I think, to have seen that. But yeah, again, back to the imposter syndrome. We're like, people don't want to just see us.
We set the bar too high for ourselves.
Did you find that it snowballed? Like, did it grow? Or was it always this big extravaganza from there?
We did one last year. So we had our very first live show last year off the back of when we launched our book. So we wrote a book, We Love Love. And then part of that, the promotion around it was this live show in Sydney.
It was like dipping your feet in.
Yeah. And it kind of gave us a bit of taste for what works, what doesn't work. And that itself was, I mean, it definitely was still a little bit of an extravaganza, but then we felt like we had to top it. We felt like we had to do even better than that show. And so that was kind of the baseline for it. And then we worked even harder on this one, which kind of like makes me really fearful about what the next ones are going to be, because I don't know if we can top it.
We can't. We can't. We had like live performances. We had Rebel Wilson. Like we had Hollywood. We can't. We screwed ourselves. we went too high.
There's always more in the tank.
Oh my God.
When you think you're at the bottom of it, there's always a little bit more left in the tank.
Plus you like back yourself way more now that you've like accomplished this. You can go hard because you're kind of on tour, right? Do you feel like a rock fan?
Like a loser rock fan.
I saw a bus.
The bus was the funny part. We did travel with a lot of us. We had our tour manager, who was Jamie, who was amazing. We obviously had us. We had our producer, Keisha. Then we had Sam Fisher. And then we had his guitarist, Martin. Then we had Mitch, who was our stand-up. There was literally a bus, but it's so funny because Laura's kids came along as well. So you almost feel like you're on a rock star bus, but then it's the dodgiest little bus. There's no room. There's nothing on there. The kids are on there. We've got all the suitcases. It was not fancy at all.
There was no part of me that felt like we were on a rock star bus. Like literally, I had my kids strapped into the little car seats. I'm trying to hand out snacks to hungover people and also to children. For me.
No, it's a Greyhound bus.
Yeah, literally. Trying to like juggle the workload around the parent load was a pretty interesting time. You get through it. You survive.
Well, it looked very, very sick. Can't wait to go and check out the next one. Let's talk about how you got here to this like rock star moment. I feel like it is one of the top podcasts. I feel like almost like these days, everyone knows someone who's been on a reality TV show. So it's not like you go on reality TV and then it means, you know, you have this amazing career. The fact that you guys have been able to achieve longevity and you're one of the biggest like personalities in Australia, like how did you get here? Oh. Where did it all start?
I think with the reality TV thing, like it's absolutely not a guarantee surefire to having anything successful after it. But what it does do is it gives you a lot of eyeballs. So you have a lot of eyeballs in a really concentrated amount of time. And so you have an opportunity to do something with it. And if you can do something with it, then they're the people who end up having longevity. And if you don't do something with it, then people go on to the next thing that's interesting or the next thing that they want to invest in. Brit and I, we met very shortly after Brit's season. I reached out to her whilst she was on The Bachelor. So when I was on the show, Alex Nation, she kind of messaged me and was like, I know you're going through a really hard time. And she's like, if you need anyone to chat to. And this was before she realized that I was the person at the end, even though I think she kind of knew that that was happening. And then I did the same to Brit. I reached out to Brit. She was going through a really hard time at that moment. And then we connected afterwards and started talking about our crappy ex-boyfriends and our like relationship stuff, just as girls do. And it was from there that we both kind of were like, let's do this. Let's turn into a podcast. I don't think either of us really could have imagined just how far it would have come, more so because at the time I was 8 months pregnant. So I was like in the thick of that.
It's so funny. Crazy. I was really forcing this idea onto Laura at that time. And I was like, I know if we need to get one episode out before you have the baby, because then it's almost like a responsibility. It's held us that we have to keep going. So you were like, I could be giving birth any day. And I'm like, it's cool. We'll just put down this episode, release it, see what happens. And it went straight to number one, which we didn't think. And then she had a baby 3 weeks later or something. And then it was pretty bad, but we almost had to continue. Yeah. So then Laura was going in, baby strapped to a titty, doing the podcast. Marley was sleeping under the table in a cot thing. But like, you know, while we were recording. Off the back of what Laura just said and your original question, which was, you know, you go on reality TV and people think that that is the key to success and everything's going to fall on a platter. It's absolutely not that way at all. If you look in the public eye now and you see how many people are doing things off the back of reality TV, it's like, I don't know, 5%, even less maybe.
It's a saturated market now, for sure.
It comes down to the same thing as anything. It is hard work and it's consistency and like any business. And we did this podcast for a year without earning any money. We did it as a passion. I would come off a 12-hour night shift in a hospital and do it. Laura would come in after her business at Tony May with a newborn. And we weren't earning money. It would have been so easy to quit. So easy. Like we were still new. We were exhausted. We were not making money. But we loved it. And I think that is the key to success.
Especially with the world of podcasting. A lot of people think you just get in a room and chat and then you just chuck it out and that's it and it's done. And like, of course, there are
Jane's
podcasts.
Like, what? You don't?
You're like, judging
what else am I meant to do?
No, but then it's like, they think like it's just that and then you put it out and then all of a sudden you're going to get all these downloads and that's your career set. But there's so much work that has to go into like the editing of the content, the honing of the content. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was one of the big things that we worked on from the very beginning. Every single episode was tightened to make sure that when people were listening to it, they weren't trailing off and getting bored. It's not perfectionism, but I really care about the product that we put out. And that was definitely something that was always there from the beginning. And so that consistency of content for us was the reason why people kept coming back, because not only were we dedicated to creating it, we were dedicated to it being like as good as we could possibly make it.
Because you still sign off on all your podcasts and you have that final say. And I feel like that's probably what keeps it real.
I think a common misconception is that when you do have a podcast as big as ours, and I say that, I think we're at nearly 70 million listens.
Oh my God.
You know, we've charted.
Just going to cry with my stats now.
No. But we've
babe, you're doing all right. Don't you worry.
I'll trade you light. We've charted for 4.5 years since we started. We've always been in that sort of top 10. And I think the common misconception is when you have a level of success, quote unquote, like that, that there's this huge team. But it has always been Laura, myself, and then we hired producer Keisha. We brought producer Keisha on to take the load off Laura to edit, but Laura will never put an episode out that she hasn't re-gone over with her ears and eyes to make sure.
I re-edit everything, but not because Keisha's not doing an amazing job. It's just because when you have a podcast that's going out to that many people, you have to have it listened to by two people and edited by two people, because it's like the safety net of what makes it through to being published. When you write a book, you have a publisher and then you have somebody else who re-edits it as well.
I think that's a big part of why when you say we still sign off on it, it doesn't go through 12 other people and we're like, let's approve it. We're the team.
And so I think part of your success has also come from like the fact that even when you started the podcast, it wasn't like the obvious option thing to do. It's like a lot more common to start a podcast. Like even now, I remember when I started the podcast, one of my girlfriends, Kelly McCarron, was like, Jane, don't worry. Most podcasts don't make it past 10 episodes. Just get past the first 10.
Kelly, you're okay. Like, fuck you, Kelly. I know, Kelly, I can say that.
Now, because there's so many, everyone's starting podcasts, but like you guys started when it was still, I think to take that riskier, less proven path is when you started as like more of like an OG in the podcast world.
But I also think that kind of is a testament to doing well in so many businesses, right? Like if you're an early adopter of something, we were pretty early on in the podcast world in Australia, especially in terms of the type of content that we were doing. Like there weren't any other female podcasts that were doing relationship content in the way that we were, like two friends having a conversation. There was things like The Hookup from Triple J, or there were other sex and relationships podcasts, but they were almost instructional or they were educational, whereas ours was educational, but it was also just conversational, which was what made it kind of different. I think that was like a really big key of the success was like getting in earlier and the consistency of it.
It's just content that you can just listen to and just relax. If you're driving, 100%. Getting your lashes done.
I think that's the other part to it, right? A big part to it was the relatability. Yeah. We just threw ourselves under the bus. We were talking about our own disaster stories and our embarrassing moments. And I can't believe we were telling things at the time where we were like, I can't believe I'm putting this out there. But if one person would write back and say, thanks, you made me feel better, that was enough for us to keep embarrassing ourselves. And then all of a sudden it wasn't embarrassing anymore, because you cannot embarrass us anymore. Like with how much shit we have put out to the world.
What's the most obscene story you've told about yourself?
The most obscene one that I've told about myself.
Yours has got to be your boyfriend fucking your leg.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Go on.
I dated a guy in my 20s, and this was part of the live show. This was one of my stories. So I dated a guy in my 20s. He was in my first like really big relationship. Like I was like, this is the man I'm going to marry. Yeah. And at the time, I thought he just thought I was so sexy that he wanted to have sex with all of me. But no, he had a kink and he would fuck the back of my knee.
Oh my God.
Or under my arm. Shame to him. It was great. Whatever. We had a great time. It was more the funny fact that like I had no idea that this was a kink at the time. I just thought like I took it as a compliment.
Well, you also thought it was probably not that left field. Surely everyone fucks a neck or an armpit sometimes. Like, you know, that's what
I was like, this is normal. This is like at the beginning of my like sexual experiences. So I was like, okay, that's what people do. Sure. Get it in my elbow. Get it in my underarm.
You're like, less effort for me.
Totally.
You just have to lay there. Like, you know how you do the underarm fart thing? Like when you're a kid, you know, when you put your hand under there.
Oh my God.
We're taking a detour, guys. It's not gone down a good path.
Again, this is why we don't get embarrassed. I haven't let anyone have sex with my rolls. I'm not on your level, Laura.
I mean, what about your story from the live show where you FaceTime Ben's entire family naked?
Yeah. So I met Ben's family, Ben, my partner. We're in a long distance relationship. I hadn't actually met his family yet. I had my first meeting with them. Ben was FaceTiming me and I was about to get into the shower. And so I thought, you know, it's a perfect time for a sexy moment. So I set the iPad up in the shower and I answered it. Starkest naked. We have 4K high definition. You want that quality. Ben popped up on the screen and I was like, hey, baby. And then Ben's dad was there. And then Ben's mum was there. And then Ben's sister was there. His entire family. And I was stuck. It's trying to like sext him. Anyway, I dropped to the ground. I was like, this is the most mortifying moment of my life. And that was how I met Ben's family.
Oh my God. What did you do next? You just like.
I just popped my head up. Because I dropped to the ground. I popped my head back up on the sink. And I was like, hi guys. Nice to meet you. And then I just ripped shreds off Ben later. I hung up. I was like, you know, obviously this isn't a good time. Yeah. I told Ben, I was like, you know that we are nude all the time.
Yeah.
So like if you're going to call me with your entire family, you send a text.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to call you with my entire family. Like
for the first time.
Totally. Don't have your tits out. Like, and I wouldn't have had them out. Anyway.
I mean, it really is a lucky dip, isn't it? It's a true gamble.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Yeah.
They love me though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great light. It was great light.
Great rad. So normally at the end of the podcast, I ask people like what their guilty pleasure is, how they treat themselves or like unwind. And then whenever someone says reality TV, we go into like a tangent. So now we can bring it forward and go get straight into it. But tell me about what life was like and what led into The Bachelor.
I had an amazing life, actually. I didn't have a big online presence. I didn't understand Instagram. I could not fathom why anyone else would want to see photos of me. And I remember my sister made me get an Instagram because we're going traveling around the world. And she's like, you have to get this thing where people look at your photos. And I was like, why? She's like, just for family and stuff. I downloaded that and off we went. I, at the time, was an emergency diagnostic radiographer. That's the title. But it just means anyone that ever comes into a hospital for anything needs to be diagnosed. And that's what we do. So they need some form of imaging or screening or tests.
You're like the first people deal with people like in emergencies and stuff.
Well,
like
somebody
that.
Comes into the hospital for whatever. You come in and you're sick, right? You're like, oh, stomach pain. Or maybe you've been stabbed. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Either one. The spectrum is so broad. Mm. The doctor's like, well, I've got to figure out what's wrong.
Yeah.
Let's do a scan of your stomach. Oh my God, someone has stabbed you in the chest. Let's see if any arteries are bleeding out. They come to us. So everything that you need to see what is happening inside of your body is what I would do.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So I was doing that and my sister was doing that too. We're best friends and we were working in emergency together. And then we just decided we'd had enough one day and there must be more to life. So we quit our job and then we went on this round the world trip for 3 years. Went to about 50, 60 countries together and just had the time of our life. And I was single the whole time. And I got back after this incredible trip that I wish I documented more. Like I would have been an amazing travel influencer had have known. Like the places I've been, I didn't care for it then. I just really lived. But I got back and all of a sudden life was so boring. I was like, well, this can't be life after I've just had this incredible experience for 3 years.
You're in an emergency and you're like,
this is boring.
And but still, yeah.
This guy's bleeding on the table. You're like, oh, God, again?
And so funnily enough, because I'd been single for so long, I'd had one serious partner in my adult life and he was a sociopath with a double life. He was marrying someone else at the same time.
Oh, my God.
And then after that, I'd been single for like 5, 6, 7 years. My friends, I actually got on to The Bachelor. I got on Blake Garvey season because my friends applied for me. And I remember going to the auditions and everything. And then I said, no, no fucking way. I was like, not for me, which is why I went around the world. I was like, I want to go traveling. I don't want to do a show. I promised them that if I got back from my trip 3 years later and I was still single, that I would go on the show. Not thinking, you know, I thought I was going to go meet the love of my life, as you do in all the fairy tales. did not happen. And I got back and I was like, cool, I'll give it a whirl. And then I literally ended up on the Honey Badger season and I feel like the rest is history.
It's like those people that make like friendship pacts. Are like, if we're both still single at 30,
yeah,
we'll like
marry
we'll
each other.
Marry each other. You made that pact with The Bachelor.
I did. I did. And I often think I'm really big on like the universe giving you what you need at a certain time and like trusting that process. Cause a lot of people are like, you got on a show that people dream to get on and then you didn't want it. And I was like, yeah, because there was nothing that felt like, not one part felt like that was what I was supposed to do. And then when I got on the Honey Badgers, my season, everyone was saying, don't do it. Everyone's like, don't go on a trashy show. And I was like, no, this is going to be amazing. Like, I feel like there's a pull to it. And that was it. Yeah.
Hey, Polly fam, I've got something special for you. For a limited time only, I have a discount code for my business course. In case you didn't know, the course is a blueprint for starting an online business and growing it to 7 or 8 figures. It's 10 modules of videos that you can watch at your own pace, covering everything from sourcing product, growing and developing your product range, operations, and marketing and scaling your business. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout at thelazyceo.com.
And you actually did have so much attraction and in common with him on the show.
It was sort of spoken about on the show in hindsight. I had big imposter syndrome there, so I didn't really believe it at the time. But from the very beginning, everyone on the show was always like, if you don't win, you'll be at the end in some capacity. Like, we did just have this amazing connection and so much in common from the moment we met.
I think that's almost worse though, when they're like, if you don't win, you'll at least be at the end. Because like, you only want to be at the end if you're winning. Like, no one wants to be at the end and then get
heartbroken. The most heartbroken. Because,
yeah, it's like you got the most dumped. Like, obviously everyone else got dumped, but like that poor person at the end who like is the only one to go home at that time is just like, it's fucking horrible.
Yeah, well, we thought that was the case, but turns out they're not the only one to go home.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we
know. Totally. For me, going back to like pre-batch days, I still do the same thing that I did then. Like, I had a jewelry label. I had a pop-up store where you used to have a pop-up store. I was down in 100 Squared in Westfield.
That's where we met.
So I had my store down in Westfield for 6 years. And like, I started that by doing Bonnet Markets, and I left my very corporate job because jewelry was always like my hobby that I'd always done. And then I really wanted to turn it into my business and like my number one. I was doing that, but also I had kind of gotten to a point, because it had been 6 years, that I was able to take a little bit of a break from it. Because when you run your own business, you can't just take 3 months off and go and do something like The Bachelor. Like, the wheels stop turning, you stop making money. So I'd been through, personally, like business-wise was great, but personally my life was in absolute fucking tatters. I'd gone through like 2 back-to-back bad breakups. One of them worse than the other was like in a relationship with a guy who lived overseas, who was had a
nothing wrong
life
with that
and, as well, which was the thing that Brit and I bonded over. Yeah. And my housemates at the time, I was living with a really great girlfriend who was my old neighbor. We'd moved in together because we kind of mutually fostered my now dog and another guy. It was just like a really fun vibe. Vanessa and Brandon, kind of like a gay frat house, but I was the only one that wasn't gay in this house because everyone was like single and it was really fun. And they both entered me on The Bachelor. So we were like watching one night, and it must have been, I can't remember what season it was, but it was an episode and I'd never really watched the show. And Brandon and Vanessa were both like, you have to go on this. You would be great on this sort of show. And so for me, it was always like, ha ha ha, that's so dumb. That's so funny. We were all drunk. We all did the application online. A few months later, I got the phone call and I was kind of going through this break up at the time, and we were getting back together and breaking up again. And then eventually I said yes. The day that we were supposed to go in, what happens is they have this like minibus that goes around and picks you up, but you get given a secret location. So you got to pack your suitcase. For me, it was a field out in Alexandria. You had to stand in the middle of a fucking field.
Very FBI.
Haze.
Like, come and pick you up, right?
It's like a frat thing.
Yeah, hazy.
Yeah.
Totally. Your butt?
Yeah. I wish.
Yeah, that was a different night.
That was early on the single dates. No, they were like, we'll come and pick you up at this specific time. And then we take you to a secret location. I just didn't want to do it. I still kind of thought maybe I would work it out with my ex. And I was like in this real flux of life and I just didn't end up going. And I got a phone call from the producers and they tried to convince me. And they basically gave me an ultimatum. They were like, look, if you can be at the Ultima Hotel by tomorrow, 10 a.m., you can still come and be a part of it. And I was like, cool, thanks, but no thanks. I'm really resolved in the decision I've made. And there's zero part of me that wants to be involved. And they're like, okay, really disappointed, but like understand. Anyway, this sounds so dumb. And every time I say it, I sound like I'm crazy. But
I don't think it's crazy.
I went to sleep that night, hadn't packed a single thing, went to sleep, and I woke up at about 3 a.m. and had had this like visceral dream. I don't remember the content of the dream, but I was like, I have to go, which sounds so dumb. And I called my sister, I woke up my housemates, we packed my bag. By 5 a.m., I'd had everything packed and I was in a car on the way to Ultimo Hotel. At the time, I didn't know that Matt was the bachelor because that was only released once we were locked in the house, right? So once we were in the hotel and we had no access to the news, that's when it was released who the person was that was going to be the bachelor. But funnily, so I was walking up on that red carpet, the entrance where you see the bachelor for the first time. And I saw him, and Matt and I had had a moment like 2.5 months earlier where we had seen each other in Bondi at Icebergs at the spa, at the sauna. We'd not spoken to each other, hadn't exchanged a single word. You know when you have really intense eyes with someone?
Yeah.
Oh, and I was like, why is this guy not coming and talking to me? Or maybe there's something on me. Like, he's so hot. Anyway, it was very awkward, but I...
He's totally like, I better not get into a relationship before the show 100%. Starts and fuck it up for everyone.
100%. So he'd already been signed to be the bachelor. Yeah. So of course he was like... She's hot, but I'm not going to. Yeah. Anyway, on our very first single date, it never made it on air because it probably would have given too much away at the time. I sort of said to him, I was like, this is either going to make me sound like a crazy person or maybe you might remember. And he said, yeah, you're the girl from the sauna.
Oh my God.
And so for me, I do feel like that there was like, I was meant to be there. It was like right place, right time. Yeah. You know, we have little kids together now. And
I actually remember when... You guys had your red carpet moment at the start. And I was like, oh, she's clearly the one. He's the one.
I looked like I was so nervous. I looked like I dropped a tab of acid. My eyes were like, and I was like, ah, it's nice to meet you. I was so scared. Like, I've never had so much adrenaline in my body in my entire life.
How long is that moment, like, in real life?
10 minutes, 15 right. minutes.
10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, it's really short.
Oh, well, some people is really, some people is like 2 minutes because it's awkward as fuck. And they're like, goodbye, hurry along.
What's the most ridiculous thing that someone bought as a gift in your seasons?
You don't really...
I don't remember.
No, you don't remember. And mine didn't even make it to air, but like you don't even get to do a choice, to be honest, of what you want. Mm. It's because you cannot do something that anyone on any other season's red carpet has done. So a producer literally comes to you and says, what's your red carpet shtick? And you're like, oh, what about... And you bring, you know, what about I bring him this? Like, it's been done, season two, there's something else. And you just churn through ideas.
Running out of stuff. This season.
I ended up bringing... specifically handmade fortune cookies because of my travel. Like they still try and link it to you that were different colors. And one of them was my favorite color. And then inside I had written like so much fucking effort. Inside I had written quotes that I loved, but I had one favorite quote that I had put inside of my favorite colored fortune cookie. And the whole idea was like he had to pick his favorite.
Yeah.
And he ended up, I don't know why they didn't show it. It was really cute. He ended up picking my favorite, my quote, my color, whatever. And it was really cute. That took me a long time to get to that idea because everything's been done.
Yeah.
I did nothing. I don't know. Maybe because I was like coming and then not coming. I think I didn't get the pep talk around what am I going to do.
Yeah.
And it was on the night when I was in the limo with the three other girls. Because like they don't tell you this either. You share the limo. It's like being on a minibus in a limo. All the girls are crammed
and you
in
pile waiting. Out.
No, I think the people that really are the serious contenders don't have a gimmick. So
no, Laura only came the day before. That's why.
They were like, oh, fuck, she's arrived. What are we going to make her do? They were lucky to have a dress for me, I reckon.
There was a moment. You could see it.
It's weird to kind of be like we met on reality TV because our life is so normal now. We're just a normal couple with normal kids, have a normal family. And I think it's also like the fanfare of the whole batch thing. Like it felt very special. It is a very special relationship, but it's very normal now as well.
For there to have been like one sliding door moment in your life, do you think that was your urge to like start packing? And was yours to actually like go traveling? You know, that moment that was the catalyst for everything to change.
I think it all leads into one another. But for me, traveling set me up for everything. I truly believe I only got on The Bachelor because of how much I had traveled and explored, because Nick, my bachelor, was such an adventurer. I think that they really saw that would be a connection because it made me vastly more interesting. And I don't want to say that in a mean way, but not that I wasn't interesting, but I was living a normal life. I went to work in a hospital.
You lived a little more.
I had so much more experience. You know, the things I had done, I'd been drugged multiple times overseas.
I mean, that doesn't make it more interesting. That's awful.
But I think the other thing too, which I don't regret anything in my life really, I was in this horrific relationship with someone for 2 years that I thought I would marry. And it came out that
Life.
Well, it came out that he was marrying someone else. Wow. He was with them for 6 years. So I, in fact, even though we were 2 years deep, I was the other woman because she'd been around for 4 years before I even came on the scene. You know, we had the same dogs. We were buying the same houses. We had the same names for our kids. He made us wear the same perfumes. Like, insanity. I went traveling because of him, right? I was like, fuck you. My life is in tatters. I'm out. I'm leaving. So that made me travel for 3 years. And then both of those combined, the producers couldn't get enough, like rubbing their hands together when they were like, oh my God, this girl was with someone with a double life. That's fucking crazy. Yeah. So she's heartbroken. She's a broken little bird, but then she had this experience to find herself. So I think it all really leads in. So I don't think there's one particular moment for me, but I don't think I would have gotten on The Bachelor without the breakup and the travel. Yeah.
But I do love this idea of sliding doors moments. I think we all have them in life. And I think it's like they're those opportunities to lean into something that's completely different, or you can stay safe and not do that thing and your life will stay exactly where it is and continue on the trajectory that it's already on. Like, yeah, for anybody who's taken big risks and done things that are completely outside their comfort zone, that's where really cool stuff happens. And that's when life pivots and whole new opportunities come up.
When I went and lived abroad, and this is when I had already worked almost 3 years in corporate, I used to think about my corporate job as like financial security.
100%.
Being immigrants, it's all about like, you know, you go to the university, you go to the right school to get the right mark, to get into the right uni degree, to get the right job. That's everything you've been working towards. And then to achieve financial security, stability, which is all I had ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And after I traveled, I saw that there was more to life. And I started to look at that as like a prison sentence. I didn't want to have to do 40 years of hard time in accounting.
Well, it's also interesting because like for a lot of people, when they think of financial security, they think of financial security working under someone who will pay them, you know? So it's not about having your own business and that giving you financial security and financial freedom and like lifestyle freedom.
Well, that's because the responsibility is on you.
Totally. Yeah. It's around the structure of working within an organization and knowing that you will always get a paycheck from that.
I do have one big sliding doors moment I've just realized, if you want to hear it. We haven't really spoken about it. It's when I met my partner, Ben, now. I had gone through a bad breakup with my ex. He's an Aussie. Jordan was his name. We broke up so amicably, loved him truly dearly, so, so wholeheartedly. I thought I would spend my life with him. And I had a year of heartbreak. Like nothing has ever taken me so long to get over, not even my horrific breakup. I just didn't want to date. The thought of kissing someone made me feel sick. I cried. I didn't want to get out of bed. Like I was proper in a really bad place for a long time. In almost a year to the day, I woke up one morning and I just thought, this is it. Something's different and I need to get back out there and get back on the horse. I'm going to have my first ever one night stand. I know everyone's shock horror. I've never had a one night stand. I'm going to go online, meet someone that I have no connection with that doesn't know me. Maybe I'll get someone that's foreign from overseas that doesn't, you know, like have any history. I'm going to have sex with them. It's going to be amazing and it's going to set me, you know, on the path to recovery. You know, there are so many Brazilian travelers around where I live. Yeah. I was like, I'll just go meet a random Brazilian and have a really great night. Anyway, I opened up Raya, this dating app, and the first person that popped up is this 6'6", beautiful Swiss athlete. He was like 100 meters away. And I was like, what the hell? I was like, this is perfect. He's a smoke show. He's down the road and he's only here for 3 days. So I'll never see this guy again.
You really do one night stands wrong.
Yeah.
You're really bad at them.
So we had the funniest one night stand ever. And I say just funny because I didn't know how to do it. I was like, and when I say do it, I'm like,
not the sex.
That do you open the door in lingerie? Do you have dinner? Do you get straight to it? I ordered us a chicken schnitzel.
Shower lady.
Exactly. No, I ordered us a chicken schnitzel. He came to my house. We had a full on dinner and hours of talking and then we had sex. Anyway, that was me being like, okay, see you. I'll never see you again. I'm back. I'm free. And then we literally fell in love that weekend and that was it. And now we've been together a little over a year, but I feel like I've never had a pull so much in my life on that day to wake up and go and pick this person that night. Yeah. And it just completely changed my life. Yeah. So I think you need to listen to those intuition, those feelings when you do have this overwhelming feeling to do something.
To get on a dating app.
Mm-hmm. To fuck. When you feel like sex, you know, listen to your body.
The recommendations from this podcast is when you have the urge to go on a reality TV show or get on a dating app. Yeah. That's what we're taking from this.
Just fucking do it.
Exactly.
Happy New Year, potty fam. Guess what? I have conjunctivitis and literally the worst case of it. I look like an actual monster.
Yes, what a great start to the year. So much for a new year routine. Instead, I'm dosed up on meds and super painful eye drops. Like, imagine dropping chili onto your eyeballs every 2 hours. I think I'm just most.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I was frustrated because I was so excited to come into the new year and just to get shit done. But now I have to put everything on hold and just try and recover. Anyway, I'm buying myself a buffer week and delivering to you part two to the Life on Card podcast episode next week, where we talk more about Laura's incredible jewelry brand, Tony May, and how she juggles the business, motherhood, the radio show, and the podcast, and how the girls have achieved longevity in a career in media, whereas for most people, a stint on reality TV is just 15 minutes of fame. And the girls share some really incredible life advice. Anyway, I'm determined to drop a podcast episode every week. So see you next week for part two of Life Uncut. Hope your new year is off to a much better start than mine.
Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.